You're listening to Khan Podcasts.
6 months after the October 7th attack, much of the community of Kibbutz Nirim in the Gaza periphery has resettled temporarily in housing in Beersheba. We spoke with longtime Kibbutz Nirim resident Adele Raymer about the efforts to rebuild the community and build resilience, asking her first where she finds herself 6 months later.
So you mean where does it find me on October 185th, 2023?
Yeah.
Stuck back in October, actually. My life was stolen from me on October 7th. And we've been through a lot since then, waiting to hear of loved ones who were captured, every so often getting more heartbreaking news of another hostage that will not be returning alive. We've been in my community, first was in Eilat, then we moved to Beersheba, which is a little bit closer to home at least, and not in the confines of a hotel, so a little bit more freedom, but working very hard on building resilience, trying to preserve community, which is not easy when, okay, we're in the same city at least, and not all kibbutzim are even in the same city, but we're spread out over four different neighborhoods. And it's not easy preserving community in that situation. And yeah, I've been abroad three times already, to the States twice and to Germany once, and planning more trips, both for public advocacy and fundraising so that we can rebuild our community, because we have to make it bigger and better and stronger and more attractive than ever before in order to encourage families with young children to move back there and new ones to come. Not everybody's going to be moving back. Mm-hmm. I will, but not everybody will. And we're going to need We need to work really hard on that, because, as I've said numerous times, if you give up on Kibbutz Nirim, you can give up on Israel.
Kibbutz Nirim members, as you mentioned, were murdered in the onslaught. Members are also still in Gaza.
Right.
And in addition, the kibbutz is trying to maintain, you say, a communal life. In this sense, most of the kibbutz is, at least in this more or less geographic proximity to one another?
So 70% of us are in Beersheba, and the rest are spread out in different areas of the country for different reasons. And I wouldn't call it a communal life, but a community life, because we are no longer the kibbutz of the 1940s and 50s and 60s of total communal lives, but we do have a very strong sense of community, and we're trying to preserve that, because community builds resilience.
Have you been going to Nirim in this interim period at various times?
Yeah, I get to Nirim at least once a week. This week I'm going to be going there with my son, who was in the safe room with me on October 7th, although he does not live on Nirim anymore, but he was there with me in the safe room, and he was abroad for a few months after the October 7th attack and has not been back to Nirim yet, and he wants to come to Nirim with me to sort of close circle, and we're going to sleep there. I slept there a couple of weeks ago for the first time. So he wants to also come back to Nirim and spend some time there reclaiming our home.
What
you
is
know, emotionally?
What is that feeling being in that space? What do you see when you go to the kibbutz?
So most of the kibbutz looks good. Ever since it started around in November when there was a ceasefire on the hostage releases, that the team that works on landscaping started coming back to the kibbutz and cleaning things up and mowing the lawns. And they're there now every day. Like, people work on Nirim every day. You go to Nirim, you don't see a lot of people, but there are people who are working in the fields, and there are people who are working in the garage and working in the landscaping, and there's people around. You can't just abandon cows. In fact, Nirim was the only dairy that was up and milking within 24 hours of the attack. There were still terrorists running rampant around, and they were up and milking. So there's very much a presence there, but a lot of army. But you know, I go there and it's so eerie because you don't hear any sounds of children.
It's not one of the communities where families have been permitted to move back. Is that correct?
No. And you can't bring kids back there. Kids who lived through October 7th and are still traumatized, you cannot bring them back to an area like that. You hear so many explosions on the other side of the border, and even, you know, I think it was yesterday, some of the communities have been allowed to come back, and there's a school that's up and running where the old school was in the Tsukhar area. And yesterday they had an incoming rocket alert when the kids were in school. And I just cannot imagine what those kids went through during that alert. They've worked so hard, 6 months working on trying to get your resilience back and not being scared that any minute there could be another incoming rocket. And then they're in school, not even with their parents. They're in school and they have to run for cover. So certainly for people who live in a community like mine that's so close to the border, you can't do that. We're not talking about returning until at least October. There's 25 houses that just need to be bulldozed and rebuilt. You can't go back to a kibbutz when not everybody has a home. We have to rebuild homes. We have to rebuild infrastructure, electricity, water that were destroyed. There's a lot of work to do before we could go home. So, like I said, most of the kibbutz looks pretty good, but there are houses that are just all burnt and destroyed and have to be taken down. And there's 25 houses that just need to be bulldozed. Another 45 houses were seriously damaged, and it's not sure yet. It's not totally up to us. It's, you know, the insurance and everything have to be the ones that decide, is this building savable or does it have to be just torn down and rebuilt? So it's going to take a while. Although we were pioneers in 1946 when we were one of the 11 Nekudot, the 11 points that went out at the behest of David Ben-Gurion to settle the Negev in the middle of the night so that there would be a Jewish presence there when the state was founded. And we believe that we can be pioneers again and be among the first communities that are so frontline that we'll be able to get back and rebuild and reconstruct and reclaim what was stolen from us on October 7th.
What is important for you to have, probably security first and foremost, in order to feel you can move back?
Well, it has to be quiet. And I don't know exactly. I do not know what the government and what the army will need to do in order to regain the sense of security that I had on October 6th. The sense that I could go out. October 7th, I planned to wake up at 5:45 in the morning, take my camera in my car, drive out to the fields, and take pictures of a field of wildflowers at sunrise. I don't know what has to happen in order for me to be able to reclaim that sense of security, but what I do know is that it's going to have to be much more than just a sense, because as we saw on October 7th, that sense was not something that was truly tangible. It disappeared. It dissipated with the fog in the morning. So what they have to do in order to get that back, in order to enable me to get that back, I don't know. We're having kibbutz meetings on it now, on what we need in order to gain back our sense of security, our sense of resilience, what under what conditions we will be able to move back as a community. We'll have to see. It's a process, and it's still got a ways to go.
And as you mentioned, each family has its considerations, but you sound certain, determined, you want to go back home.
The great majority of the people say that they want to go back home because it is our home. The question is when and under what circumstances.
Recently, I was driving back from that region on a Friday afternoon, and you pass one of the roadside shelters, which has the sign cleared, and next to it is a teenage boy sitting under one of these temporary shades selling flowers for Shabbat. And it really seemed sort of to hold the trauma and the hope in one place and in one hand, and that can be possible, that there can be a return for this, mm-hmm. for a quiet yeah. time and living in a place. But it doesn't eradicate the pain and the loss as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I worked on a project with those decorated art shelters that were decorated by the JNF. And I built a map of all of the shelters and curate pictures and information for the website about JNF. So when October 7th happened, I'm looking at the pictures and seeing all of these art shelters that Eliasaf Meira so lovingly designed, and JNF raised all this money to decorate them, to make these ugly bits of concrete into things of beauty in the middle of our landscape, and my heart just broke, and I'm trying to get back to it because Eliasaf is up and painting again. He's painting new shelters. What happens with the old ones will have to be decided. Whether to fix, you can't really erase scars. I don't know if you should really erase scars completely, but like there are tattoo artists that take people's scars and make them into a thing of beauty for their own healing. We're going to have to find a way to heal our scars and to use those as something on the one hand that will let us always remember, because October 7th can never, ever, ever happen again. But with resilience and looking forward to the future, for using that as a springboard for rebuilding.